Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I want to see teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this show, I sometimes interview people, I sometimes share strategies and frameworks and blueprints. I tell stories and I share some of the big epic fails I've made along the way. Because ultimately, I believe that teachers are the most critical factor when it comes to students reaching their creative potential. And so that's what we talk about on this show. And today, we're going to be talking about two different topics that I think are actually heavily related to each other. The first is PBL, which we talk about often, project-based learning. It's a common topic on this podcast. And the second is SEL, or social-emotional learning. And I think it's important to recognize that both of these topics have been labeled at different times as trendy, right? I remember in the early 2000s, it was like, well, PBL is kind of trendy right now. And right now I'm hearing the same thing about SEL. And I think it's important that we recognize that this isn't just trendy, that what is a good practice in project-based learning and what have been good practices in social-emotional learning have always been true. It's just that they are finally catching people's attention in different ways. Or it could be that during the pandemic right now, people are really thinking harder about some of those areas of SEL. And I actually think there's a lot of overlap to that. And so that's what I want to explore. And in order to do that, I want to begin with a story of when I was teaching middle school. And actually, a story of two different students. One where I feel like, yeah, that really worked. And that really went well. And the other where I look at it and say, gosh, I wish I had done a better job. So I will tell you that names are changed. I always want to protect student identities, but it's two different students that I taught when I taught middle school. So Ricardo was a shy student. By shy, I don't mean he didn't enjoy talking in front of the class or that he rarely raised his hands. It was more than that. If I called on him, he would freeze up entirely. On several occasions, I could see that he had the right answer, and I would even give him the heads up. I would say, hey, Ricardo, I'm going to call on you later. But then when I pointed to him, he would stutter and stammer or merely shrug his shoulders and say, I don't know, in a whisper tone. And this happened if I put him on the spot. This happened if I gave him prep time ahead of time. It didn't seem to matter. And the truth is, it was easy for me to relate to Ricardo. When I took public speaking as an elective my freshman year, I froze up entirely and had to quit 10 seconds into my first ever speech. My teacher let me try it a second time, and I scripted out the entire speech. But two sentences into it, my voice cracked, and I simply couldn't get the words out. I tried a third time. And it was rocky. I mean, it was really, really bad. But I managed to complete the four-minute speech. And I collapsed into my seat when I was done. Now, I wanted Ricardo to find his voice and to build confidence. I wanted him to face his fears and become, well, fearless and courageous. I wanted him to develop the critical skill of communication that he would need for the rest of his life. However, it wasn't working during these direct instruction moments or during guided practice. Instead, he had a breakthrough during an independent project. Each student completed a Geek Out blog, and this was at the very beginning of the school year. And Ricardo chose engineering and robotics as his topic. At the end of the project, students had to share their geeky interests with the class over the course of a week. Now, they had been blogging about it, and all they had to do was just kind of share their blog, give a short speech that was, you know, a couple minutes long. That's all it was. Now, I offered students the chance to record and edit videos instead of doing a synchronous presentation. Then all they would have to do is essentially press play when it was time to present. Now, this process, I think, was important. It blended together this high-stakes element of sharing your work with an audience with this lower-stakes opportunity to make mistakes and revise their works. To be honest, I wasn't sure how it would turn out. But Ricardo's video was well-produced, with creativity and humor infused throughout the entire thing. And when it was finished, I asked him if he would be willing to answer questions. And he said yes. Now, he came alive during this question and answer process. And this moment was a reminder for me of the valuable soft skills that students develop when they engage in project-based learning. See, project-based learning provides this amazing, authentic opportunity for students to develop critical soft skills. And the truth is, these are soft skills they often need in the creative economy. When Google began their Project Oxygen, they wanted to see what would be the best predictors of employee success. And they assumed that the answer would be, university programs and grades. Instead, the top of their list was being a good coach, communicating and listening well, possessing insights into others, including others' different values and points of view, having empathy toward and being supportive of one's colleagues. In other words, the most critical factors for success were basically soft skills. Later, when they studied teams in Project Aristotle, they found that the top skills were equality, generosity, curiosity toward your teammates, empathy, and emotional intelligence. Now, some would call these soft skills. But as classroom teachers, we know that there's nothing soft at all about these skills. If anything, these critical skills could be called hard skills because of the inherent challenge in mastering them. You can call these critical skills, timeless skills, vital skills, but they're not soft, not by any means. And here's the thing. Project-based learning is great because it provides this authentic context for having students develop these vital soft skills. I saw this with Ricardo, who emerged as a leader in a small group in every one of our STEAM projects. He was kind of a steampunk, you could say. And he was an excellent problem solver and a great listener. He was humble and empathetic. And yet, PBL alone doesn't guarantee that soft skills will develop. I learned that lesson the hard way with the specific collaborative project that I did the same year with this other student. So here's the deal. Halfway through the first semester, a new student arrived. Now, this kid, who we'll call Miguel, had failed out of the eighth grade once already and had spent time in a juvenile detention center. He arrived to class with his arms crossed and rarely looked up at all. He had an expression on his face that seemed to say, "I don't want to be here, and I'm not even sure you want me here either." I remember placing him in a group with Ricardo, and I thought he would thrive. This would be the chance for this particular kid, Miguel, to kind of come out of his shell. But he never engaged. Instead, he'd stare out the window or occasionally stare at his phone. And it wasn't working. Day after day after day, it just wasn't working. But then toward the end of the project, there was this one point when he leaned forward and he said, "What if..." "Go on," Ricardo said. "It's nothing," Miguel answered. "Just say it," Ricardo shot back. "Okay, what if we had a gap at the top of the loop?" Miguel pointed out. "The car would fly off," another student said. "I just thought maybe it wouldn't fly off. Like maybe the circle force." "Centrifugal force?" Ricardo asked. "Yeah, I thought maybe centrifugal force could keep the car on track," he answered. "There's not enough time to change the roller coaster," Ricardo pointed out. Other group members agreed. And that was it. No more discussion. Now that afternoon, Miguel came to me and he asked if he could work on the roller coaster project by himself. And for the next 2 weeks, he came in before school and he worked on his own project. The truth is, he had great ideas, but his group hadn't given him the chance. And it was a reminder for me that PBL alone won't lead to soft skill development. For that, we need specific strategies that develop social-emotional learning. And this is why I think that those two ideas of PBL and SEL should work together. Now, if you're not familiar, project-based learning is a pedagogical model built on the idea of having students learn through a project rather than, you know, completing a culminating project after the learning is over. I have a 5-minute video on the concept. If you're curious, you can check it out at spencervideos.com or on the blog post that goes with this podcast episode. But I truly believe that project-based learning can facilitate soft skill development by creating this context where students can engage in social-emotional learning. At the same time, when students also engage in SEL, or social-emotional learning, they develop critical soft skills that then make them better in PBL. This leads to a reciprocal relationship where PBL strengthens the SEL and SEL improves the performance in PBL tasks. And so it just goes on and on. The better students do with social-emotional learning, the better they do with project-based learning, and so on and so on and so on. Now, this is an idea that Matinga Ragatz and Mike Cackley are exploring right now in their upcoming book, The Pulse of PBL. And full disclosure, it is being published on Blend Education. It's a company, a publishing company that I co-own. And so I just thought I need to put that out there for full disclosure. But regardless of who the publisher is, I'm excited about the book, and I would be excited no matter what. That's part of why I was super excited when Mike and Matinga came to me asking if we would consider publishing their book. And if you're not familiar with social-emotional learning, there's a great framework provided by the group CASEL, C-A-S-E-L. And it's a circle with classroom, and then outside of classroom, you have schools, families and caregivers, and then communities. And there are these 5 different elements. There's self-awareness, self-management, responsible decision-making, relationship skills, and social awareness. Please go check out the CASEL framework if you haven't seen it. It is fantastic. And their resources are phenomenal as well. You can download their resources. They are great. I'll also say that if you are new to social-emotional learning, I also really enjoy the work of Lorea Martinez, and she will be featured in an upcoming podcast interview that I'm doing. So I take a deep dive into this idea of social-emotional learning in a Q&A podcast episode that I will be airing later this week. But let's start with this idea of self-awareness. PBL is a great way to teach students self-awareness. It begins by empowering students with voice and choice. They might choose the topics in a Geek Out project or a Genius Hour project. And in the process, they are, you know, integrating personal and social identities. They might tackle a particular project and problem that relates to their community. And thus, in the process, they are identifying personal, cultural, and linguistic assets, which is right there, one of the goals of the CASEL framework. In design thinking projects, students become aware of their personal biases and prejudices while also linking feelings, values, and thoughts. So again, you're noticing that these goals that I just kind of quoted about self-awareness fit perfectly into different types of PBL projects that you might do. Furthermore, the revision phase provides students with the opportunity to engage in self-assessment and peer assessment. Here, students find an authentic context to reflect on their learning in a way that really boosts metacognition. And again, that's one of those things that relates so clearly with this idea of self-awareness. The better students are at self-awareness, the more they will improve in their metacognition. And yet, you know, it's sort of a prerequisite for metacognition, but also the more they engage in metacognition, the more self-aware they become. So that itself becomes kind of cyclical as well. Now, this revision phase allows students to rehearse and revise in a low-stakes environment before ultimately launching it later. It's kind of what happened with Ricardo getting to do a video. This iterative process helps students internalize the notion that mistakes are a part of the process. They learn how to essentially fail forward. Students should feel this permission in this phase to make mistakes. It's the notion that you can't have grit unless you provide slack. But as they move through this iterative process, students begin to develop a growth mindset and experience a boost in self-efficacy. And the idea of growth mindset and self-efficacy are also components in the CASEL framework in this area of self-awareness. When students finish various projects, they can reflect on their work with something like a portfolio project. When portfolios are a part of the everyday learning process, students can showcase their best work, reflect on their growth, and set new goals and learning targets. Here, students improve their metacognition as they determine where they are in their mastery and what steps they need to take in the future. Ultimately, this leads to deeper thinking and better learning, and yes, more self-awareness. One class. So then the second idea is self-management. Now, I recently wrote about how to design collaborative projects that build student self-direction. Self-directed learning is sort of this overlap. You can kind of visualize it as a Venn diagram. And it's this overlap between students being self-starters and self-managers. And that was a critical idea in that podcast episode. You can check it out. It's from a couple episodes ago. But in the CASEL framework, this includes, quote, exhibiting self-discipline and self-motivation, as well as, quote, demonstrating personal and collective agency. And so the goal is to really think about moving from students being, you know, in a teacher-centered mode into being in a student-centered mode. Here, students can own every part of the process. And in PBL, the student ownership might be having students asking their own questions. Students pursue their own sources and engage in authentic research. They analyze data and come to their own conclusions. They generate their own ideas and engage in brainstorming and ideation. They revise their work. They clarify their audience and find ways to launch their work to an audience. And so in every single one of those phases, there is that sense of student ownership. And I'll also point out that this idea of self-management has a really strong overlap in PBL with the idea of project management. And project management involves things like goal setting. It also includes having students manage their tasks, create the deadlines, problem solve, just tracking their progress overall. And there are a lot of different ways to have students own this project management process. They could use a single spreadsheet with things like group roles, tasks, deadlines, and people responsible. So that's one idea. Another option is they might use something like Trello, which works really great for older students. They could also do things like, you know, visual-oriented project management where they sketch out their tasks and they break down the tasks. Any of these strategies that you're using for project management, any of these protocols, build student ownership and ultimately are really building this idea of student self-management at both the individual level and at the collective level. The third area is responsible decision-making. Projects provide an excellent context for responsible decision-making. For example, consider the CASEL goals of, quote, demonstrating curiosity and open-mindedness, and of learning how to make reasoned judgment after analyzing information, data, and facts. These align perfectly with something like an inquiry-based learning project, right? So a specific inquiry project like a Wonder Day project would work perfectly. Now, in the case of something like a service learning project or a design thinking project, students might engage in a project centered around community issues. For years, my students used to do this project called Project Social Voice, where they would research a particular community issue. They would do things like a needs assessment, interviews with community members. They engaged in community service and ultimately presented a solution to that particular issue. Now, this aligned with the CASEL goals of, quote, identifying solutions for personal and social problems, as well as, quote, anticipating and evaluating the consequences of one's actions, end quote. Now, they're also engaging in things like systems thinking, and, you know, they're doing that at both the personal and community levels. Again, all of that fits into this SEL idea of responsible decision making. Now, regardless of the kind of project that you're doing, students will likely engage in critical thinking and data analysis in the research phase of a project. And again, when this is happening, they are engaging in that critical thinking, that inquiry, the curiosity, that all fit into this SEL idea of responsible decision making. The next area is relationship skills. Collaborative projects provide the ideal context for students to develop relationship skills. However, this requires a certain level of intentionality in the design of our projects. The mistake I made with Miguel was that his group didn't work interdependently, and I didn't do anything to facilitate that. Interdependence is the overlap between autonomy and group cohesion. It's what happens when each student has voice, choice, and personal accountability, while also depending on one another to accomplish their tasks. In these moments, they create something better together than they would individually on their own. In SEL, this involves, quote, practicing teamwork and collaborative problem solving, as well as, quote, seeking or offering support and help when needed. Now, the point is you can design structures that build on interdependency. If you want to know more about that, check out that recent podcast episode I did about how to take collaborative projects to the next level and improve, you know, group collaboration. The idea is that you are getting students to depend on each other in the way that you've designed your actual structures and protocols within PBL. Another key area is trust. As teachers, we can create structures and protocols that help students develop trust and group cohesion. This fits in with the idea of, quote, developing positive relationships, end quote. You might build trust through doing trust-building activities like a mini maker project, divergent thinking challenges, getting to know you activities. But you might take it to the next level by having students develop their own team norms or group commitments. Here they can clarify what it means to build on student trust. And finally, we just have to admit in this area of relationships that conflict will happen. And for that reason, it's really important that we have a process where students can resolve conflict constructively. And there's a lot of different protocols and systems out there to help students navigate conflict and resolve it on their own first before they ever go to the teacher. Finally, there is social awareness. Students can develop social awareness in pretty much every phase of a project. As they work collaboratively, they will learn how to value their group members' perspectives and recognize the strengths in each other. However, with some projects, like design thinking projects, there's a specific opportunity to become more socially aware at a, I guess, larger, more communal or collective level. And this fits in with the SEL goal of demonstrating empathy and compassion. As teachers, we can help create structures that facilitate empathy. It might involve community interviews, observations, doing a day in the life activity. It could be needs assessments. All of those will help students become more socially aware of the community around them. You can also have them do small design sprints and then afterwards deconstruct to see maybe where their biases are or who is being left out. An example would be that I have this prompt relating to inventing a sport. And you can build student empathy by asking who can play this game and who doesn't have access to this game. And this becomes an entry point for thinking about empathy in design and questioning things like, you know, where is the ableism in our project? Or what assumptions am I making as a student that I need to kind of re-examine? And then they can, and this is critical, they can actually talk and interview people with limited mobility and hear stories about what it means to create something truly universally accessible. I think it's important that this empathy piece has a humble conversation with people who actually have lived experience in different areas. So those are the five key areas of SEL. And as you can tell, there's a lot of overlap between these. Note that PBL and SEL are not new things that you need to add to an already crowded plate. Instead, it's about rearranging your plate in a way that allows students to engage in more meaningful projects that also develop vital soft skills. Ultimately, PBL provides a fantastic context for students to learn and really practice critical SEL skills. And that's where there is such an overlap between PBL and SEL. And at the same time, we can integrate SEL strategy as into the lessons. And along the way, this will sort of facilitate the soft skill development that we're going for. So we can teach these SEL skills, but then they practice them in PBL. And as they practice them, they become better at PBL as a result. Ultimately, when PBL and SEL work together in tandem, students grow into those critical thinking, lifelong learners that we know they can be. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Again, thank you so much for listening. We are going to have an upcoming episode real soon that takes a deeper dive into SEL, and I am so excited. But thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.